This is Pure Decking, show number 372 for Thursday, whatever the hell today is. Meeting hell. That's what today is. Today has been meeting hell. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and using personal experience to determine just how much Bondo is considered unhealthy. I'm Morps, and tonight I am drinking bourbon. What is this bourbon? Knob Creek. Oh, single barrel reserve pick. Madman, what's up?
Nothing much. Murdering giants. Drinking Sam Adams random shit.
What are you using to murder the giants? And I'm surprised there are giants in that part of Kentucky.
Lever action Marlin 3030. And there won't be in a minute.
Fair enough. Are you? What's up?
I'm wondering which one of you fuckers pissed the sun off. Because it's taking its rage out on me and the temperature here today. I got the old air conditioner running.
Well, it's probably Madman executing the giants. I can see that pissing
there
off.
There we go. Yeah. But, just want to get a little hashtag trending out there. Get nude for Greta. Yep, that's right. Everybody should become a nudist. There's the climate goblin. Even if she didn't say it, fuck it, sounds fun anyway.
I should clip out her going, "How dare you," and just keep it on standby, but Kratter already did it. So
I think everybody's got that clip on there as well.
Yeah, I'm not gonna. Just because, I'd end up punching the soundboard at some point. Get tired of it. I would get sick of it, and if I'm getting sick of it, you know it's bad.
Yeah. Well, apart from that, it's bloody hot, but that's Australia for you in the summer.
So... anyways, let's see. Nothing in the station news block. No surprise there. I don't think I've had station news for a year. I guess we'll move straight into this. So first article up is part. I've got two articles picked out to kind of, hit the main discussion. First one, Trend Micro says one of its employees stole and sold customer data. Antivirus software company Trend... this is from CNET. Antivirus Trends... damn it. I'll be able to read here in just a second. I have to, sort my head. Antivirus software Trend Micro on Tuesday revealed a security incident in which an employee accessed customer data for criminal purposes. The personal data of an unknown number of customers who bought its PC security products was disclosed in the scheme, the company said. Trend Micro has already notified affected customers and looped in law enforcement. Trend Micro called the attack, which took place in early August, a malicious internal source that engaged in a premeditated infiltration scheme to bypass our sophisticated controls. So either he was given access to this data, or he... got somebody else's password to get access to this data. And having seen most corporate file servers, sophisticated controls usually means Windows share permissions, which if you ever look in an aged file server, usually somebody has put the everyone object pretty high up in the chain and give rights to everybody because figuring out permissions was too hard. So when I hear our sophisticated controls, my first thought is bullshit.
Yeah.
That thought makes me sad. But he probably had access, and then it just misused his access.
Well, a lot of companies will use real data when they're, they'll copy production data for QA and testing purposes. So this guy probably had, read access to a database somewhere, and he was cloning, and he could clone it out to write test code and things like that. I mean, if he's a programmer, I don't know. They just say an employee. And I don't know. Could have been a janitor doing a, shoulder surf for all I know. But let's see. The company alleges criminals began scam calling customers. while impersonating staff members. At the end of October, it discovered the attack was coordinated by an employee who used a customer support database with names, phone numbers. Oh, fuck, this could have been just somebody in the call center. Customer support database with names, phone numbers, email addresses, and support ticket numbers, then allegedly sold the stolen information to a third party. No financial or credit card payment information was accessed, Trend Micro said. Business and government customers were also unaffected. We took swift action to contain this situation, including immediately disabling the unauthorized account access and terminating the employee in question. So you disabled an account in Active Directory and fired a dude. And we are continuing to work with law enforcement on the ongoing investigation, Trend Micro said in a blog post. The antivirus company advised that it never calls customers unexpectedly. So, classic insider threat. This is why you need, you know, to review who's accessing your databases, and not just do they have rights to do it, but because I'm betting this guy had rights to access that data. But how often and how much data are they pulling? Is it normal for a customer support person to pull a couple thousand names a day, you know? So, to go with this, I've got this next story from the Washington Post. Go ahead and get this in, and then we can start, you know, you'll figure out where I'm going with this pretty quickly. Former Twitter employees charged with spying for Saudi Arabia by digging into the accounts of Kingdom critics. The Justice Department has charged two former Twitter employees with spying for Saudi Arabia by accessing the company's information on dissidents who use the platform, marking the first time federal prosecutors have publicly accused the kingdom of running agents in the United States. I doubt they were agents. They probably just, you know, said, hey, you guys want to be able to afford a house in California? We'll give you stupid amounts of money. You give us this data. That's usually how insider threats happen.
That would make them agents.
Okay.
That's how most agents get recruited.
You are technically correct, which is the best kind of correct, but I was thinking agents as in they intentionally planted somebody as opposed to recruiting, but you're right.
Well, I'd say they probably recruited from inside. You probably find that the couple of people they did recruit were caught in compromising positions with either drugs or underage women and things like that.
No, I believe they're actually Saudi nationals.
Okay.
One of those implicated in the scheme, according to court papers, is an associate of the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who the CIA has concluded likely ordered the assassination of journalist Jamal Khashoggi in Istanbul last year. I have mispronounced every name in this article, and I, you know, sorry, not sorry. The case highlights the issue of foreign powers exploiting American social media platforms to identify critics and suppress their voices, and it raises concerns about the ability of Silicon Valley to protect the private information of dissidents and other users from repressive governments. The charges, unveiled Wednesday in San Francisco, came a day after the arrest of one of the former Twitter employees, Abu Ammo? I don't know.
Yeah, I'll go with that one. Ammo.
A-B-O-U-A-M-M-O. Abu Ammo? Yeah. A U.S. citizen who is alleged to have spied on the accounts of three users, including one whose posts discuss the inner workings of the Saudi leadership on behalf of the government in Riyadh. Abu Ammo is also charged with falsifying an invoice to obstruct an FBI investigation. The second former Twitter employee, Ali Azabara, a Saudi citizen, was accused of accessing the personal information of more than 6,000 Twitter accounts in 2015 on behalf of Saudi Arabia. One of these accounts belonged to a prominent dissident, Omar Abdulaziz. Sorry. I don't know how to wrap my tongue around these names.
I think that man has more problems than you mispronouncing his name. That's all I'm saying.
Who later... Okay, I'm not mispronouncing these names on purpose. I'm just bad at it. who later became close to Khashoggi and a Washington Post contributing columnist who advocated for free... Okay. Prosecutors said a third individual, Saudi citizen Ahmed Al-Mutari... I'm going to need to find one of those pronunciation programs where you can just copy and paste things in and the computer says it for you. acted as an intermediary between Saudi officials and the Twitter employees. He is also charged with spying. Al-Zabara and Al-Mutari are believed to be in Saudi Arabia. The criminal complaint unsealed today alleges that Saudi agents mined Twitter's internal systems for personal information about known Saudi critics and thousands of other Twitter users, said U.S. Attorney David L. Anderson. Hey, a name I can say. But we will not allow U.S. companies or U.S. technology to become tools of foreign repression in violation of U.S. law. Twitter...
Wait, hang on.
Yeah, good luck with that, right?
They can't fucking state that. They've been helping China for how long?
Yeah... Well, they've been helping Saudi in a few other countries, too. So, IBM, early 1940s. Just going to say.
Hey, man, we're just collating.
Not exactly the best track record with controlling the use of our technology. Just saying.
Just numbers, brother. Just numbers on a piece of paper.
Twitter restricts access to sensitive account information to a limited group of trained and vetted employees, said a spokesman. Well, obviously not, said a spokesman who spoke on the condition of anonymity to protect the safety of Twitter personnel. We understand the incredible risks faced by many who use... Why do I assume every corporate spokesperson is just like an evil fuck?
Because...
That's how I always read them. Like, they're all sinister.
There is precedent, just saying.
I'm just like, why do I do that? I'm not even thinking about it. I just start doing it. You know, let me get out my Blade Runner clothes while I do this. We understand the incredible risks faced by many who use Twitter to share their perspectives with the world and to hold those in power accountable. We have tools in place to protect their privacy and their ability to do vital work. Again, obviously not. the three men... are accused of working with a Saudi official who leads a charitable organization belonging to Muhammad. Based on a description of the charity, the official is Badr al-Askar, which was confirmed by a person familiar with the case who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss the ongoing case. Askar's charity, MISC, belongs to Muhammad, who is referred to in the complaint as Royal Family Member 1. According to the complaint, Askar was working for and at the direction of Muhammad with respect to his online presence on Twitter. In 2015, when most of the activity took place, Muhammad was a rising figure in the Saudi royal family. King Abdullah died in January 2015, and Muhammad's father, Salman, took the throne, and he was appointed defense minister and a few months later deputy crown prince. The activity was particularly pronounced with Abdulhamo repeatedly viewing the dissidents. The dissident Abdu Zalzi's data and calling Askar during the period, according to the complaint. The Saudi embassy did not respond to formal requests for comment. Case shows just how early the pursuit of his critics began. The rest of this goes into politics and all the blah, blah, blah. So my point with both of these articles is insider threat, right?
Yep.
So even if the company is acting in a responsible manner, say let's give both of the companies benefit of the doubt that they intended to do the right thing here, right? They've got employees who aren't following policy, and obviously the controls aren't strong enough to notice when they're breaking the policy. So, in one case, one was doing a criminal operation; in the other case, one was doing national spying or international spying for dissidents. So, this is why you should really, really be careful with giving real information to these companies. Now, in the case of Trend Micro, you're buying a product from them. You're ordering antivirus. So, you know, you probably have to give them real information to, you know, pay for it if you're buying it online. So, this is kind of why, you know, kind of why it's sad you can't really buy software in a store anymore. I mean, sure, they have those sections in a lot of stores where they've got the prepackaged stuff on the side, and I'm sure you can go into an Office store and get things like Microsoft, you know, Office or whatever. But
a lot of places you buy the key, mm-hmm. and then they expect you to download it.
Yeah, and you still have to set up an account with the key and all that. And you know, this is where if you have to really be conscious about what data you're giving these companies. Because even if the company is completely on the up and up, they might have people on the inside who are not.
Yeah.
I mean, the Twitter example is a bit extreme, but, you know, both of these articles popped up right next to each other for me, and it's like, well, yep, insider threat. There you go. So.
But with the Twitter example, you can only vet someone if they've done something wrong already.
Sure.
So these guys kept their nose clean, got placed, and then started getting the information they needed.
Well, and they very well may have gotten placed in Twitter before they became, you know, like we were talking about, you know, somebody in the Saudi royal family shows up and says, we're going to give you $100 million. Look up the data on these people. I mean, well, okay, one, if you're in Saudi Arabia and a member of the royal family asks you to do something and offers you a hefty sum of money, you know, turning them down could, you know, involve bone saws. But isn't that what they cut up the journalist with, was a bone saw?
Yeah. They're not sure what they cut him up with because they haven't found him yet.
Someone was saying something about a bone saw when they were talking about that last year.
Well, so, he still removed hands for theft. He still behead people.
So that's also,
he still publicly cane people for adultery.
So that's also a situation where, you know, the government made, you know, think of it's like a China thing. I mean, the government just shows up and says, hi,
yeah,
we're taking this.
They let women drive. Yeah, all sorts of terrible shit goes on in that country.
So that's my point, though, is that you've got to be really, really careful about what you give these guys, because, I mean, fuck, you know, even if the company's on the up and up, not everybody in it's going to be anymore.
Twitter on the up and up.
Yeah, you heard me choke on that a minute ago. You know, hell, even in my day job, that's probably what I spend a good 60% of my time doing, is watching for insider problems and trying to find ways to address potential ones. Because
yeah, but they're not always malicious, though, are they?
Nine times out of ten, they're idiots.
Yeah, I was going to say, you never put down malice to what could be, you know, looked at as incompetence.
Well, you also got to think, they're the ones that are the most threatening. I have access to what you need to protect.
Yeah, I'm not going to have a whole bunch of alerts saying, hey, somebody's guessing a password. Oh, here, Madman's now online at 3 in the morning from an address in, you know, bumfuck Idaho. I don't know why I'm
But that's why you always
Idaho,
read your logs.
Well, that's, yeah, actually. I'll tell you a story when we get off the live stream, because we hired a new guy to do some work on logs, and because I haven't had the kind of time they really deserved, he was finding stuff, and it ultimately turned out to be more idiocy, not malicious, but it sure looked malicious.
Yeah.
Ooh, and my boss, when they see somebody malicious, or that is potentially malicious, they get excited. They're like ready to go rip somebody to shreds. So,
well, they're justifying their job, see?
Well, partially, but I have to. Yeah, you know, I've got several of them who are new to managing a sim, and it's like, and they get real, real excited. We got something. Yeah, probably not. Why don't we do the work and investigate it first? But they're contacting a bad IP. Yeah. But what are they doing? They're checking the time. Uh-huh. Are they sending any data? I don't know. Did you check the logs? Okay, why don't we go check the firewall logs and see what they're sending?
Exactly.
Nothing. They're not sending anything. They're literally checking the time. Why is that? Oh, it's because Ubuntu by default uses a pooled NTP service, and that pooled NTP service happens to hit. Anyways, yeah, NTP and Tor servers can really, really frighten some people sometimes. It's like, no. I mean, I had to spend a good hour explaining. Nope, that's just NTP. That's just checking the time. It shouldn't be doing it.
It's what it's supposed to be doing.
It's kind of stupid that, you know, the guys who... Anyways, I need to stop. I'm getting into company shit. I need to stop.
Keep going. Go on with the story.
No, you're good. You want to keep your job.
Let's just say it really bugs me that I've got people who aren't, you know, correcting some settings before they deploy systems. Use the internal mirrors. Use the internal hosts. That's all I'd ask. Not that hard. Anyways, that's a whole nother conversation, and I'm not bitter about it at all. At all. Fucking special snowflake of a system. Anyways, moving on.
Yeah.
But how hard is it to... It is pretty hard to secure against an internal threat like that, because you need to let me have access to do my job.
Right, that's where behavior monitoring comes in. So this is where I have to have everything you do fed into a security information tool that then does trends. Madman normally looks at 10 loans a day or 10 customer or takes 10 calls a day. He normally, you know, hits 5 or 6 file shares a day. He normally hits these particular folders, these particular internal services. Then one day, Madman is hitting every fucking folder in the file server, trying to access all of them. Your account's probably compromised, or, you know, you've been compromised, or you're trying to copy everything in the file server and you're getting ready to quit. Or my personal favorite, you know, you see the people copying everything out of Salesforce and then trying to write it to a flash drive. And, of course, we get the alert such and such as trying to write data to a flash drive. And then you get the alert from Salesforce, such and such, that will pull down X megabytes of data, you know, which is over the allotted size or whatever the hell the alert was. I don't remember now. I think it was a count. I think it was a straight up, if somebody pulls in so much, you know, throw an alert. And, you know what that one was? That person was getting ready to quit, and they were taking their contact lists with them.
Ooh.
Their boss let them do it.
That means you're going to work for a competitor with your information.
And when we explained that to their boss, no, they wouldn't be doing that. Yeah. 2 months later, they found out that they lied to their boss about what job they were taking. About that.
Yeah.
And, you know, their boss went to the higher-ups in the company and got the exception for them. And, yeah, about that. We recommended not to do it. But, anyways, that actually, now that I think about it, that guy doesn't work for the company anymore either. Oh, anyways.
I wonder why.
Yeah. The, insider threat is very hard to defend against, especially if you have more immature systems or you've never had anybody who thought about it before. If you don't have that kind of behavior monitoring in place, I probably don't even have the log. You know, then you probably don't even have the logs in place to go back and double check after the fact, right? So, it's one of those things where, unless somebody is specifically trying to design defenses for it, it's very difficult to address. And even when you do have defenses designed specifically for it, such as you're not allowed to bring personal electronics into the call centers, you're not allowed to use USB flash drives, you are not allowed to access personal email accounts over the company internet, all these things, it's, you know, you can have all these defenses in place, and yet there's always going to be something you probably haven't thought of. You know, oh, somebody took a laptop home, and whereas they're not allowed to, hook up to a flash drive, maybe they're good enough to take the laptop out of their hard drive and copy it onto an uncontrolled machine. Then you've just lost all control of your data, right? Well, that's why a hard drive should be encrypted. Well, what's it encrypted with? If it's the end user's password? Huh. Or if you get somebody who's good enough to get the key out of the recovery key out of the TPM? Huh. You know? So... You have to trust your users to a point, especially when you have things like sysadmins, right? You kind of have to trust them because they're doing their job. And if you've got one that takes advantage of it, it can be very difficult to design systems that are resilient to that. And worse, when you do design systems that are resilient to that. You have a lot of people that you've made their jobs very difficult because they have to jump through hoops. They've got to do things in very specific ways. It may not be efficient or fast. And that makes it difficult to retain headcount because nobody wants to deal with a system that's that much of a pain in the ass.
And if you get too many false flags, you'll get a security team used to clicking the OK button.
That's right. Rats is asking, how hard is it to put this kind of stuff in if it doesn't exist? It well, like anything in IT, it depends.
It's not that hard as long as management's willing to work with you.
And
understands what you're trying to do.
And usually the only way that happens is that you're the victim of it, or a company in your industry is the victim of it, and they decide they're willing to put up the resources to fix it. Because ultimately, it's going to come down to money. You're either going to have to buy systems and software to support it, like a SIM, log management software, file monitoring software. You're going to have people in there to monitor these systems. You can have – that's actually a very common problem. Like a lot of these breaches that happen, the alerts are in the monitoring systems, but nobody's responded to them because you've got one or two guys getting 500 security alerts an hour, you know. Or they've got their SIM so tuned they never see the alerts, even though they're in the system, but it never gets raised because, you know, like Madman was saying, the one alert is real, but the 999 others that they just got, you know, in the couple of months before them weren't, so they turned the alert off. So it's hard. It's difficult. And you need resources do you have to buy software and systems? You could use open source and build the systems. If most of your backend is running Linux, there's a lot of things you can just turn on in the kernel to get that kind of monitoring. But you still need the people. You still need
one
the
of
time.
The bigger problems.
You're
going
to impact your production apps, so you've got to have that kind of backing for management.
It's not all not always just that. How many positions have a set? Here is your role. This is what you do. And then how many positions have evolved over time? And that person has these responsibilities. But when someone else steps up to his role, they might not have all of those anymore. Like, defined jobs are really hard in a lot of small businesses.
Oh, yeah, I know. I mean, you end up with people wearing multiple hats. And then, of course, my favorite is when they hire in somebody new. Well, they're going to be doing the same thing as Fred over there. So just copy all of Fred's access. Well, Fred's got sysadmin to a bunch of things. Oh, yeah, he used to work over there. But, yeah, make sure the new person has that, too, because they might need it. No, wait until they do need it, and then we'll give it to them. So, what's this? I always thought a good way to steal files. Oh, Rats has got a scenario for me here. I always thought a good way to steal files with minimal control would be a VGA capture card, page through PDF documents, later go back to the video and screen cap. Stick it on the back of the PC, shows up as a generic VGA monitor. Doesn't identify, I don't think. How would you defend against this? Like duplicate monitors to VGA in your main monitor. Well, that's an interesting one. If it's a VGA capture device, like an HDMI one's actually fairly common. You can get an HDMI capture.
My first question is, how are you getting through the front door to put this in?
Well, and this is where you get into things like we were talking about earlier, about just simply not allowing personal electronics into a system. But, like, I'm thinking, like, okay, what if you have one of those, they're like $200 or something like that for, like, recording your Xbox, those HDMI capture things, where it's just a box and it records it? But there's photo to doc programs. No, you're right. You could absolutely take those, you know, take the frames as you page through stuff and OCR it and get them back into electronic form. Or, you know, if it's, you know, a large enough enterprise, just, you know, pay people to transcribe it from your video. That'd be a difficult one because you're right. I'm going to control USB devices. I'm going to control device drivers. What I'm probably not going to do is control what video cards or what monitors you hook it up to, because most systems don't care. So if you're in that kind of a scenario and you've got that kind of a device, I would think probably my best bet would be looking up you know, is it your job to pull up these documents that you're paging through and recording videos of? You know, am I getting alerts that you're accessing things in the file server that you're is not really required for your job? Are you requesting access to things? Am I seeing a lot of access denied where you're trying to get into other parts of the system that, you know, maybe your job's not set up to do?
On that one, it might be the supervisor. Are you authorized to put hardware on your computer?
Well, a lot of times if you see somebody rooting around under their desk and you ask them what they're doing, you know, usually the rule is that only the help desk is supposed to touch the hardware, right? So, now, does that mean somebody could come in early or stay late and do it? Sure. Yeah, I'm not sure how I would catch that. That might actually be back to looking at the cameras and seeing somebody hook things
up. That's what I was going to say. That would fall back on physical security. That's not your issue.
Yeah,
you don't have to watch for that. That's someone else. Because to really pull this off, unless you're already working on the inside, how do you get the monitor in there on the box?
Well,
you're caught.
And a lot of places have clean room IT like that, like nuclear plants and things like that. They do that where you know, outside hardware is not allowed in. You're not bringing a briefcase in. And if you start rooting around with the computer on the back end, somebody's going to fucking notice you hooking a game capture device up to it, right?
Yeah.
But if you are in a smaller business or maybe someplace that's, you know, a little bit more lax, yeah, it could work. There is no such thing as perfect security, right?
Yeah.
What you do is you work in layers. You try to put in as many, you know, tripwires, as many alarm bells as you can. You try to make it as big a pain in the ass as you can for somebody to steal data from you. But there is no perfect system because somebody at the end of the day still has to work on it, right? You know, I could, you know, take a computer, encrypt it all to hell, take it out in the backyard and bury it in a concrete coffin, and that'd probably be secure. But somebody's going to notice me burying it and be very curious as to why I just buried that computer and probably dig it up in the middle of the night. So
challenge accepted.
Right. So he's linked some Amazon product he wants me to look at. USB video capture, HDMI and VGA dual screen mirroring display dongle for projector compatible with Android. Is that really a capture device? That looks like a... looks like just an adapter. Can support audio video output and dual screen sync. Oh, okay. I see what that's doing. That's like taking an HDMI in and sending it out to a VGA. That way you can capture it with something else. That's an interesting little device. I've not seen that. Huh. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a pretty sophisticated attack. A lot of the times, though, the people who are that interested, if somebody is smart enough to think of doing that and putting in that kind of effort, the truth is I'm probably not going to stop them, right?
Offer them a job.
Yeah. But most people who are stealing data aren't that smart. They aren't thinking, okay, they're probably doing this kind of data monitoring. They're not listening to the kind of logging I'm doing. They're probably... You know, I get alerts every day of people just trying to dump shit onto flash drives, and we have to call up their boss and be like, yeah, hey, they're doing something. And then, you know, oh, they didn't know they were just trying to, you know, they thought they were going to take it home and work on it. It's like, did you explain that they're not going to do that? Yeah, yeah, we explained it. We explained it. So, yeah, so... I mean, but that's the same problem. That's actually the same problem, Rats, now that you mention it, as like the TSA guys with the body scanners just taking pictures of the screen with their phone. You know, what's to stop that? Well, hopefully a manager seeing them taking pictures of the screen with their phones. So there are some things that just come down to, you know, if somebody's disgruntled and you see them doing weird shit with the back of the computer, maybe somebody might want to take a look at it, right? So... But yeah, if they're hiding the fact that they're disgruntled, well, and they're aware of what the security measures are, I mean, nothing's perfect. If man can dream it up, man can defeat it, right? It's just how much time, resource, and effort are you willing to put into it? My job is just to make it a big enough pain in the ass that you'll decide it's profitable, more profitable to go bug somebody else's systems than mine. So... But that doesn't help when you've got somebody who's politically motivated or, you know, personally motivated against the company for some reason. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a never-ending cat and mouse game. I'm ready to move on to this China story. You guys ready to move on to this China story?
Yes.
I'm good.
I didn't mean to get diverted for so long there.
It allowed me to read all this stuff.
That's an interesting question, right? So,
yeah.
Anyways, this next one up is from Business Insider. China is barring gamers from under 18 from playing video games after 10 p.m. in a move meant to curb a growing addiction. My question, how? How are they going to enforce
facial recognition?
This? I got that story, too. That's next. But
they're requiring your ISP to enforce it. You get a user login. It's only good for so many minutes of video game time.
So, yeah, here it is. Here's the bullet points from the article. China's General Administration of Press and Publication on Tuesday introduced new gaming restrictions meant to tackle video game addiction among children. According to the notice, users under 18 will be barred from playing between 10 p.m. and 8 a.m. and were restricted to only 90 minutes of gaming on weekdays. A representative for the agency told state news agency Xinhua that an online gaming industry has boomed in the country in recent years and the prevalence of video game addiction. Last year, WHO recognized video game addiction as a mental health condition.
Yeah, but transgenderism isn't.
Sorry. Just leave that where that is.
That one really fucking irked me because it happened in the same week.
I don't disagree with you. I just not where I was going with it.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail.
It's more like my first thought is how? How are you going to know that somebody's, you know, laying in bed with an iPad playing a game, but then, you know, if all of your games are online and you have to be online to play them, yeah, it's actually not that hard. But I'm thinking, of course, my first thought was, you know, Super Nintendo days, right?
In an absolute no shock, the retro resurgence in China fucking starts with video games. You know what I mean? No, fuck that shit. I'm just playing retro.
Yeah. You
know? Woohoo! Mario 1 just became exceptionally popular again.
That's what I mean. And surprising no one in China.
Well, you know, I'm not going to say it's impossible because I've gotten a Commodore 64 on Wi-Fi, but I've yet to see a Super Nintendo on Wi-Fi. You know, how are they going to fucking know? Unless your parents are ratting you out to the state. That'd kind of suck.
Well, they probably would too because social credit score if you got caught.
The social credit score. Oh, my God. Oh, my son play video games at night. He don't tell anybody.
They fucking would, dude. Yeah. They would. They brainwash. It's so indoctrinated, man.
They probably wouldn't sound like that either. But that's the only voice that comes to mind. I don't know why. Probably racist. Sorry, not sorry. China is tackling a growing problem of video game addiction by introducing a curfew for its younger players and capping their gameplay time. I still want to know how. The China's General Administration of Press and Publication on Tuesday released a new set of six guidelines referred to as the Notice on Preventing Minors from Indulging in Online Games. According to, you know, it calls out online at least. So according to the notice, users under 18 will be barred from playing between 10 p.m. and 8 a.m. and restricted to only 90 minutes of gaming on the weekdays. On weekends and public holidays, that cap is raised to 180 minutes. Damn. On the weekends, 180 minutes a day of online game. No all-day WoW binging for you.
Well, I can see this is not a bad thing, but really it should be a parental thing and not a government thing.
They're out of the StarCraft championships. Woohoo! I don't have to worry about China.
Chinese gold no, farmers. Dude,
they will have state-run fucking StarCraft places. Don't worry.
I think you're thinking of Korea.
Well, if China doesn't play, it means Korea is still going to be number one.
Hmm.
China number two. Korea number one.
The notice also places a limit on the amount of money children can spend in making game in-game purchases. Children 8 to 16 can spend a maximum of 200 won, or about $29 a month, while those from ages 16 to 18 can spend double that amount. The rules also require... You know what this is going to create? So in the States, when somebody turns 21, the tradition is to take them out and get them blackout drunk, right? I don't think a lot of people actually do it, but a lot of people say they're going to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
In China, it's going to be as soon as they turn 18, they're going to go on all day, you know, MMO binges.
Damn.
Let's see. The rules also require video game users to register for online gaming accounts using their real names alongside valid identification. Call for strengthening oversight. Oh, there was a comment I missed. Call for strengthening oversight in the gaming industry. Suggest revising the game rating systems and better adjusting them to appropriate age groups. And propose better guidelines for parents on how to manage their children's online game consumption. Excuse me. Man, this would have pissed me off back in the day. I spent so much time playing Gemstones 3. Admittedly, that's because it took forever to get anywhere playing Gemstones 3, but that's not the point. For anybody who doesn't know what it was, it's a mud.
Remember, parents, beatings early and often.
A representative for the agency told the state news agency Xinhua that the online gaming industry has... Why would you name your newspaper after the sound you make when you get kicked in the nards?
They make a different sound. It doesn't translate well in Chinese.
Oh, okay. That represents the online gaming industry had boomed in the country in the recent years, so had the prevalence of video game addiction. These problems affect the physical and mental health and normal learning of and life of minors, the person said. The strict set of rules will apply to all online game companies and platforms that operate in the company, according to CNN. According to market research firm Newzoo, China is the second largest gaming market in the world behind the U.S., though the firm predicts China will claim first place in the gaming market by revenue next year. The prevalence of video games around the world led to the World Health Organization in 2018 to recognize video game addiction as a mental health condition. In extreme cases, gaming has been blamed for several deaths. And
do you think this will, you'll see gaming houses changing formats of games now that don't require more than 90 minutes effort? Or will they just have more loot box shit?
I think they're going to have more loot box shit because they're going to want to hit that maximum of 200 won a month that kid can spend.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll redirect the games now towards more adult theme stuff because, children aren't allowed to play.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Actually, apparently the Switch store has a bunch of adult, the Nintendo Switch has apparently a bunch of adult games in it. Some people at work were complaining that their kids found them.
Those hentai fucking things.
Yeah, those.
Oh, dude. That's the worst your kid finds? Yeah, be thankful you've got a good kid.
I was joking with them.
It could be worse. You walk in there on Pornhub in the fisting section.
They're into, you go in there, you check the browser history, you see the Pornhub, categories for BDSM, and it's like, well, you can't spank them, so now what?
Oh, dude, I thought I was wrong. That's just fucking terrible.
It was a bad joke, what?
I think I dated a few chicks that were like that. Anyway.
All right, Madman, you got anything on that before we move on?
Nope, I think you finished it off rather nicely.
Just murdered that story.
You finished it off.
Held the pillow right over its face until it stopped screaming. It's been a week. Anyways, next article is from technode.com. China is testing emotion recognition in surveillance push. They're trying to recognize emotions on camera.
They're having great success, too.
China is attempting to predict potential crimes using artificial intelligence, employing the technology to monitor the emotional state of its citizens, the Financial Times reported. Psychopaths much? Citizen, you are too upset. You will be shot in 5, 4.
You would be surprised which other countries are using this stuff as well.
Most of Europe, our country is looking into it, and so is yours.
Yep. But it's already been implemented into the UK system.
The Chinese are the furthest ahead with it, though. They're not. They're using it. They're training it off children.
We've all deployed it to help with mental health situations.
But yeah, the machine learning is coming from children. They're just using schools as giant laboratories for facial recognition.
So when are SARS masks going to become illegal? It's like, oh no, I'm worried I'm going to get sick. I'm going to wear this face mask. You are circumventing facial recognition and emotional recognition. The robots will come out to begin beating you now. I mean,
yeah, I never thought of that. But it's mainly Korea and Japan are big for those masks.
Yeah.
I don't think they really took off in China.
Why it matters. China is the world's largest surveillance market and is home to some of the world's biggest equipment makers. Several prominent Chinese AI firms were last month added to a U.S. trade blacklist for their alleged complacency in Beijing's human rights violations in the northwestern Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region.
Well played.
The blacklisting compromised a number of the country's AI champions, including Sensei Time and Yitu, speech recognition in iFlytek, and surveillance camera maker Hikey Vision. Using video footage, emotion recognition can rapidly identify criminal suspects by analyzing their mental state to prevent illegal acts, including terrorism and smuggling.
Terrorism slash smuggling.
Do they look nervous? Go arrest that man.
The AI goes, I recognize that emotion. That is the exact emotion that is produced when a man is uncomfortable with the 2.5 grams shoved up his anus. Anyways,
No, I'm really holding big turd. I'm sweating to get to bathroom. Don't arrest me. I need poop. Just need to poop.
We're going to need you to take a shit in the kiddie pool, please.
I need you to read me this children's book, Madman, in that voice.
Big Dishonor. No shit in pool, shit in bathroom. Big Dishonor, shit in pool.
Glad it's casual racism Tuesday.
Oh, Madman, can you go get a copy of Green Eggs and Ham?
I do not like Green Eggs and Ham. I do not like them semi-ham. I do not like them with the goat. I do not like them in my coat. I do not like them on a boat.
I don't know whether I should be worried about the voice or that he knows Green Eggs and Ham by heart.
Well, you know, at least it wasn't the Lorax.
Don't know that one.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect you to.
Oh.
That's the Seuss character who says he speaks for the trees.
Yeah. I know of him, I just don't know any of his books.
Let's see. Emotion recognition was a hot topic at this year's China's Public Security Expo. Companies include Hikvision, search giant Baidu, Huawei were recognized among the 1,500 exhibitors. Emotion recognition is mostly deployed at Chinese customs, where it is used to identify signs of nervousness, aggression, and the likelihood of attacking others. What if they look dead inside? I mean, can you like the kind of dead inside the eyes of a hooker have? Do you recognize those?
I think that's what the Chinese government's going for.
Oh, okay.
They want everybody to be like that.
Long-time muling might have that same effect. Because they're only looking for nervous people. If you don't give a fuck, it's not going to catch you.
I mean, that's the same thing with like a polygraph, though. Actually, yeah. My understanding was by clenching your ass cheeks at certain times, you could fool the polygraph, so... if anybody has one of those, you know, we have a theory to test. It's going to involve Taco Bell and China is not the only country testing out emotion recognition capabilities, as companies including Google and Microsoft are also working on the technology. Nonetheless, experts say in its current state the technology doesn't work very well. It's a bit of a gimmick, FT said it, a popular Chinese blogger is saying. So anyways, this is where it's going. And, you know, you saw some of this stuff in, like, of course, you know, the anime Psychopass was all about this, but you saw some of it in Ghost in the Shell, too, where they were, you know, like, assessing people's states or just flat-out hacking into their brains to see what they were thinking. Oh, geez, when we do get to a Ghost in the Shell state and you're just always online, that'll be a thing. Huh.
I'm not going to have my brain hooked up to the internet.
At least not all the time. I mean, you know, the occasional, you know, recreational trip. But
Yeah, I'll just grab some VR goggles.
You know, I have those, and now Steam has been making very strange recognitions to my gaming library.
Don't worry. You can get as many copies of as many versions of Beat Saber as you want. We will not think any less of you.
At least that you'll tell me about.
No, I would tell you if I thought less of you. I'm literally saying I won't think less of you.
Oh, right. He already thinks pretty lowly of me. Got it. All right.
I think you're already playing Beat Saber with virtual goggles. Like, once you're eating chocolate ice cream, the different flavors doesn't matter.
All right. Let's, next one here. This is a very interesting write-up. It's called Light Commands. And I'm not going to sit here and read the whole thing. This is a research paper that they put up a website for, and then they're demonstrating their equipment, which is basically an audio amplifier, a laser driver, and a laser pointer. And there used to be a trick you could do with a photodiode where you could mix into the amplitude of a laser an audio signal. And then you could point that laser at a photodiode, hook the photodiode up to another amplifier and a speaker, and you could basically send audio over a laser. And the fidelity was okay. It wasn't terrible. You could definitely tell what you were listening to. Well, what these guys have done is they have figured out how to point a laser at the microphone of the voice assistant boxes. You know, the talking tube things, like an Alexa or a Google Home, whatever it's called. So, of course, in the videos, they show them pointing the laser right at the microphone on these things, right? But, you know, as the technology gets better, and then, you know, it's a laser, so distance becomes interesting. But pretty much, they were able to, they've got a whole list on the website here of things they were able to do this trick on, where they basically were able to point a laser at the microphone and send voice commands. And to the Google Home, Google Home Mini, Nest Cam IQ, several versions of the Echo, the Plus first generation, second generation, the Echo Dot, the Echo Show, Facebook Portal Mini, Fire Cube TV, iPhone XR, iPad 6th Gen, Samsung Galaxy S9. So basically anything with one of these microphone arrays, they figured out that they can point this laser at and send commands to the voice assistant. You know, of course, we always joke about, you know, Alexa, Google butt porn. I don't know.
Google, Alexa, add the biggest, blackest dildo to my shopping cart.
Yeah, there it is. Alexa, who was the Prophet Muhammad? You know, shit like that. But, you know, this could be a real thing if, you know, people have, like, smart locks. Or, you know, of course, they have them tied to Amazon accounts, so they could potentially be ordering things for you. Or, I mean, depending on what all you have this tied into, this could actually be a problem.
Oh, shine it through the front door. Alexa, unlock the doors.
Yeah.
You've got Amazon delivery.
So, now granted, of course, it's a laser, right? So if you put a piece of cloth or something over the Alexa, that might defeat it. But if you use a strong enough laser, it will make its own path to the microphone.
But then it cooks the microphone, defeating the purpose.
Yeah, that's also true. So it's a very interesting attack. Honestly, looking at the custom equipment and tripods they're using where they're, you know, really working to get that laser into the exact right spot on the device. Not certain how practical it is, but it's very interesting. And you can think of scenarios where it might be useful. Yeah, just start, you know, making your Amazon Alexa order the components for building a nuclear weapon.
No, you're going to ask it what everyone wants to ask an Alexa. Alexa, did Epstein commit suicide?
And we lost RU. So, I don't have anything else on that other than it's just really interesting.
That's going to get you on a watch list, even just putting that in your shopping cart.
Oh. Oh, I did that to RU. I kept sending him Amazon links and didn't tell him what they were. And it was basically the shit for enriching and then ordering samples of plutonium. You know, it was the metal box, a small centrifuge, a sample of plutonium. It was funny as hell. He was like, "What are you sending me?" He was actually worried about ending up on watch lists in his country because of those links. Of course, he wouldn't even click a link, you know, about the giggle sticks, so.
Hey, when you live in that type of country, you live in that type of country.
Yeah, that's true. For anybody who's wondering, the giggle stick is the 30-round Glock magazine. Gun gets a little warm shooting that, but it's good fun.
And if you have a reload and don't have time to reload, you can beat a man to death with it.
It's pretty heavy when it's loaded. Kid made a reactor out of 600 smoke detectors. Oh, okay. They figured out smoke detectors had a little bit of radioactive. Okay, yeah, that works. Yeah, find another product that's got what you need in it. So, anyways, this next article is from the Next Web. After killing its ambitious Daydream VR project last month, Google is making the Cardboard VR project open source. The company said the code repository includes features such as APIs for head tracking, lens distortion rendering, and input handling for developers to build Android and iOS apps designed for Cardboard VR experiences. Google Cardboard was released 5 years ago at the company's developer conference, Google I.O. The search giant claims 15 million units of Cardboard VR made using its Cardboard manufacturing kit were used worldwide. Google said the use of Cardboard VR declined over time, and it's no longer actively developing the software development kit. Quote, "While we've seen overall usage of Cardboard decline over time, we're no longer actively developing the Google VR SDK. We still see consistent usage around the entertainment and education experiences like YouTube and Expeditions, and want to ensure Cardboard's no-frills access accessible to everyone in approach to VR remains available. The Cardboard headset was an affordable way for anyone to experience VR in the world, but it never took off the way Google envisioned. 4 years ago, the author had plenty of Cardboard-like headsets lying around his house. He used them as a novelty to show off to friends or watch VR-based video on YouTube occasionally, but latency lag and lack of compelling VR apps killed his interest. Over time, phone companies have also dialed back VR efforts and concentrated more on providing solid AR experiences through Google's AR Core and Apple's AR Kit." So, they've basically posted the whole code onto GitHub, which is actually really nice because if they're not going to be developing it, there are open source VR projects that can now look at how Google was doing things like some of the lens correction, some of the head tracking, and incorporate that into other projects, right? Or at least draw inspiration from it. So, like some of the open source, like I know that there's an open source VR headset project that was trying to figure out how to use like the Windows Mixed Reality headsets and Oculus headsets on Linux. And it had kind of stalled out and that they had parts of it working and parts of it not working. So, you know, having Google open source this, I could see some interesting spinoff projects come out of this. So I at least I hope we do.
I just think it's cool whenever a company says, "We're not going to continue with this product. Here, have fun with it, all you that have bought a product, have bought this product and were interested in it."
Well, it's a Google Cardboard. Those are the headsets that you could find in Walmart for $5.
Yeah, you put your phone in it.
Yeah.
But if I had gotten any software, I don't know if they even put out a game for it, but Cardboard Google first-person shooter, it's cool to know that those games can still keep coming out if people want to keep making them.
Yeah. So I'm pleased about this, and I like seeing them do that. So as opposed to just abandoning the project and killing it, just throwing it on GitHub and calling it a day, I'm okay with that. Are you? You're back.
Yeah, thoughts? That's fine by me as well, man. I'm glad they're giving the software out. Like, if you're going to abandon it, don't lock it away. So, let it be free.
You missed where I was regaling the or retelling the story of the day I kept sending you the Amazon links and didn't tell you what they were for until you clicked on the plutonium sample.
Yeah, thanks for that. Look forward to having my fingernails removed one by one as I try to explain.
So, you know, I have friends on the internet who are assholes. So, and the last article I have for tonight is from Vice. 8chan is back with a new name, and QAnon is already posting. 8chan, the anonymous message board that hosted rants from multiple mass shooters in the last 12 months, has reappeared online, and so is its most famous user, QAnon. The site reappeared after 3 months after it was taken down. Editors, fuck's sake. The site reappeared 3 months after it was taken down in the wake of the El Paso mass shooting, and in spite of efforts to keep it offline led by Frederick Bremen, who founded the forum but was no longer involved with it. The site came back online Saturday under the new name 8kun, thanks to a Russian hosting service that is typically associated with hosting ransomware and stolen credit cards. I mean, you know, bottom of the barrel. Not to mention naming the thing 8kun.
I think it means something else in his language.
I think it does,
he's
too.
He's based out of Thailand or something like that.
I mean, isn't that one of the... isn't that an anime meme, Kun?
I have no idea, man.
I know it's part of the Japanese language. I just don't know how they're referencing here. Anyways, within hours of the site coming online, those supporting the conspiracy theories of QAnon, which have been embraced by President Donald Trump's right-wing MAGA supporters, were rejoicing. Hang on. Right-wing MAGA supporters. Someone claiming to be Q made a number of posts on the site, including a link to a YouTube video of an American flag waving in the breeze. Hang on. We'll go with something for that, too.
The stirring, unmistakable patriotism of the Velociraptor holding up a tattered American flag.
He also posted the cryptic message "Rig for Red," which some QAnon followers have speculated that he is about to surface. Even though all those using 8chan and 8kun post content anonymously, the site identifies individuals using their IP addresses and assigns them identity numbers known as trip codes. It is this that has allowed the site's administrators and QAnon followers to claim that this is the real Q. Q previously stated that he would never post an update anywhere but 8chan, so when the site went offline 3 months ago, it left his followers adrift. The site was taken offline in August in the wake of mass shooting in Walmart in El Paso, Texas, after the accused shooter posted a 4-page rant to 8chan attempting to explain his actions. In March, the man who allegedly killed dozens of people at two... I don't think that's allegedly. I think that video made it pretty definitive. Killed dozens of people at two New Zealand mosques, posted a screed to the site just before the attack. Weeks later, the suspect in the shooting at synagogue... in Poway, California, did the same thing. Ever since El Paso, efforts to bring it back were hampered in part by web infrastructure companies like Cloudflare, which have refused to host the website. Site's owner Jim Watkins told Congress in September that the site would only come back online once it was able to develop additional tools to counter illegal content under United States law. The 8kun name is an effort to show the website is maturing. In Japanese... Oh, good, they're explaining this. And Rats is explaining Kun in the IRC as well to me. he's been trying to get my attention.
Goddamn caps lock Americans.
No, he's not using caps lock. He's just, you know, the IRC client beeps every time my name shows up. So it's like, okay.
All the kiddies using the fucking boomer term. It's caps lock American, okay? Get it right. It's not boomer. Caps lock American.
Caps lock American. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In Japanese, the suffix chan typically refers to a child, while kun typically refers to a young man. However, the site is virtually identical to the predecessor, and within minutes of the site coming back online, the same anti-Semitic content that was present on 8chan was being shared on 8kun. In recent weeks, Watkins and his son, Ron Watkins, who acts as the site's administrator, have tried to use a wide variety of hosting services in recent weeks, including Chinese, tech giants Alibaba, and Tencent. The administrators of the site were finally able to get it live thanks to the services of MediaLand LLC, a hosting service operated out of Russia by a 36-year-old Ukrainian Alexandrov Bolzolkov. I'm sucking at names tonight. So, anyways. A report by investigative reporter Brian Krebs in July revealed that Volosovkiv's service, described as bulletproof hosting, was being used for everything from hosting ransomware, supporting services stealing credit cards, and facilitating phishing websites on a grand scale. Such hosting services do not come cheap, however, and yet they remain vulnerable to those seeking to take the site offline again. "This is the most expensive place you could have chose, and it is the easiest to overwhelm," Brennan told Vice News. "Anyone who wants to can send a denial-of-service attack and very easily take it down. This is not a long-term solution." At least he admits it. Since the site went live on Saturday, administrators have said they have been facing significant cyber attacks. "We are having a lot of issues with attacks and some lingering software bugs," Ron Watkins told Vice News on Sunday night. "We are working on it again, but I think it'll still be another handful of days before we are stable again." Nick Lim, CEO of Vanwatech, a U.S. company providing cyber attack protection to 8kun, told Vice News that this was normal because he expected there to be a lot of attacks. Brennan speculated that the negative media attention on the hosting provider could see him pull his support from the site, leaving it once again searching for a hosting provider. This doesn't mean that 8kun will disappear entirely, however, as the admins have relaunched the site on regular internet alongside a dark web version, as well as a version hosted on LokiNet, a blockchain-based decentralized web platform. LokiNet. I don't know that one. I've missed that one. Are you Madman?
Blockchain-based?
Yeah, I've never heard of it before. It's the first time I'm hearing of it.
I've never heard of that one.
Just the fact that it's called LokiNet makes me want to go, I don't think I want to go there.
Now, I'm going to say, I don't claim to have perfect working knowledge of every darknet out there, but I thought I knew the main ones.
Yeah, that's the first I'm hearing of that one.
LokiNet is an anonymous, decentralized, and IP-based overlay network for the internet. Trade and communicate with absolute freedom. Loki creates privacy tools that enable untraceable secure transactions and anonymous. I'm going to have to look into this. Loki Wallet, Loki Messenger Beta, LokiNet Beta. Service notes, LokiNet. Huh. I'm going to have to look into how this works. That's a lot of slick marketing graphics.
Give us a week. We'll pull it apart.
Move, which ultimately means Q will live on. "We can't stop Q," Brennan told Vice. "They will always establish a line of communication for Q because they can just use the dark web." So somehow I think QAnon is somehow involved in the running of 8chan, because why else wouldn't they be diversifying and posting to as many different services as they could?
Because it's a giant fucking LARP.
Well, we knew that. So thoughts?
Good luck.
Fair enough. Madman?
I think Russia is going to get some strange attacks from a lot of social justice do-gooders.
It's going to be some Scooby-Doo level shenanigans, huh?
Oh, yeah.
I think Putin's former KGB, he will not take kindly to the social justice in the streets. This could end up being amazing. Nah, they'll just do denial of service attacks from America. Never mind.
Well, it's also a well-known criminal net, so
yeah,
you know, there's already tons of shit that happens there that nobody really gives a fuck about. So, yeah, I mean, they can attack that one all day long. And I mean, other than just pissing off the guy who runs it. Actually, that's not what would piss off the guy who runs it. It's the attacks. What would piss off the guy who runs it would be if he messes with his criminal connections. Because the dude's part of the Russian mob, if I remember the write-up correctly. yeah, that's not one you want to fuck with. So, anyways, let's move on to this. So, got two things for us tonight in Digital Dojo, although only one of them is really kind of serious. The first is this interesting page I found called Lolbas, Lolbas, and it means living off the land, binaries and scripts and libraries. And what this is it's a collection of known common Windows executables, scripts and libraries. So you'll see things like Disk Shadow, CScript, Control.exe, CMD.exe, Bash, things like that. And what these things are, what they've done is they've cataloged all these as these are binaries that exist in a common Windows system that can be used for, well, malicious purposes if you've taken over a Windows box, right? So, let's see. They've got, like, msbuild.exe, they've got tagged as AWL bypass and execute. So, if you get into it there, it's part of the MSNet or the Microsoft Net framework. And so, they've got several common paths to this msbuild.exe, a couple of links to some resources on how to use it. And then, as you go down, you know, okay, detection, msbuild.exe should not be normally executed on workstations. Okay, but it's there. And they go into some example usages of getting this thing to build and execute C-sharp code, right? So if you've taken over a box and you've got some code wrapped up in text that you can somehow get into, well, they've got an example as an XML file here, but you could actually execute a C-sharp project if you can get it onto the box somehow. Just using this. So this is some kind of lower level interaction with Windows stuff that, can be helpful for like, okay, here's one UAC bypass, WSReset.exe. During startup, WSReset.exe checks the registry values for HKCU, software classes, gobbledygook shell open command. And the binary will execute as a high-integrity process without a UAC prompt. So what you could do is, okay, this is how I get something to run on a Windows box that I've just taken over. Go put something in this registry key, this shell open commands. It will be ran at boot by this wsreset.exe, and here's the path to it. And then there's some more links to how to use it. And it'll run without going through the user access control. So the little prompt that says something's trying to do something administrative, are you sure you want to do this? Yeah, this gets around that. Now, granted, you got to get the machine to reboot, but that's not hard. So it's a nice set of resources for not only if you're a bad guy getting into a box, but if you're a good guy, because they have on here information about detection. Okay, well, some of them are blank, but here's how some of these built-in Windows binaries could be used. So you could be writing various rules based on whatever tools you're using to monitor your workstations. Some of these things just flat out shouldn't run. So if you see them run, you should flag them, right? But this is how some of the built-in stuff in Windows can be used for nefarious purposes. For whatever reason you might need that information, I found it really interesting. And then the last thing I have for you tonight is an excuse generator. Why the fuck was I breached? .com. So, so So here you guys go. When you need an excuse, when you need a reason to give your boss for why your computer was hacked, the fucking foreign assets used pen and paper social-based engineering or pen and paper-based social engineering to do something, but we aren't quite sure what it was. But we have since sent one of our guys to DEF CON, so it will never happen again. And then the button there is Equifax already used that one. So we get another one. The foreign assets used cyborg bees to cause an undetermined amount of damage. But we have since made everyone promise to be super, super careful. So it'll never happen again. Get one more. The APTs used 30 to 50 feral hogs to cause an undetermined amount of damage. But we have since gotten PCI certified. So it'll never happen again. Oh, good times. I'm going to send this to my boss.
It's just a piss take on Equifax.
Absolutely.
That's all it is.
That is exactly
that's
what
great.
It is. I thought you all would enjoy that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's all I got for us tonight. Listen to the stream. I'm always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit, and the IRC. In the IRC tonight, we have myself, Sardonyx, Psychros, DPView, Heratz, and Madman. Madman, closing thoughts.
I may have to check out 8chan.
No,
I don't have to check out 8chan.
Yeah, no, it's 8kun now. You have to go check out 8kun.
Yeah, it's not that great anyway. Wasn't that great when it was 8chan.
Alright, are you closing thoughts?
Big shout out and say hello to Law. Looking to catch up with you again sometime, buddy. And Epstein didn't kill himself.
All right. Well, that's what you're. That's aren't you supposed to shut down the broadcast after somebody says that? That's what you see on the news, right? Every time somebody says that, they kill the call. Or
we don't dump out when shit's going wrong.
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, just testing your loyalties, Morphs.
I don't have a control room shouting in my ear saying, kill it. Yeah, you ever wonder why the news anchors are wearing that little earpiece? That's the IFB. They've got a producer in their ear, you know, screaming, okay, this guy's talking nonsense, get him off the air, and, you know, other shit.
If anyone's interested, check out Mr. Medicare over at BitChute there on his Finding the Finders stream. It is really interesting, isn't it, Madman?
Yes, and disturbing.
And laugh and cry as you find out that the CIA started a sex cult for kids?
It wasn't for kids, but it used them.
Yeah. Either way, it's worth checking out.
All right. Now I'm going to start hitting sound effects.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Now we're going to nose down and call it a night.
But shut up, Wesley.
Seriously, though, do you?
Oh.